You just go, whoa, 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 welcome to Crime Bitch.
Like a really bad DJ.
Yes.
Like, whoa, 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 welcome to Crime Binge.
That one's my favorite. We got to change it up every once in a while.
Yeah, we can't just always say welcome to Crime Binge directly after someone says this is Crime Binge. Roast yourself, 2K20.
How do I say the podcast differently? Do I just say, you know what it is? You know it's a podcast?
Yeah, because you clicked on this in your podcast button. You had to seek this out. God. All right, should we actually get started?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is Crime Bang.
Welcome to Crime Binge,
the podcast.
And this week, we're coming at you with episode 45.
Oh, snap.
Oh, snap.
And I'm really excited about this episode.
Yeah, it's different. It's fun.
Yeah.
I like it. And it's a story that I didn't really know anything about before we were like, hey, this is an interesting case. Let's look into it more.
Exactly. But before we get into that.
Yes.
Would you like to binge or would you like to housekeep first?
Let's housekeep because we're getting to be a real podcast with housekeeping things.
Right. All right. So we got just a couple things.
Yeah.
So it was brought to our attention that last week's episode on Bison Dele.
Yes.
We talked a lot about sports players and how he was different from them because he was cultured and they all liked to party.
Yeah.
And it kind of came across as we basically called them uncultured swine.
Which they are. No, I'm just kidding.
And we obviously don't believe that.
Yeah.
But from the articles that we researched for it, they did say that he in particular was very different from his teammates at that time because his particular teammates on that team were very into partying. So we just wanted to kind of emphasize the fact that he was an outcast from his teammates and we weren't trying to like
shit talk other people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We know there's good people and bad people in every group and
And exactly. Also, if you like to party, it doesn't mean you're a bad person, which wasn't anything that we said either. But also, Sarah and I do speak in absolutist terms when we don't mean to, and we are very hyperbolic people. So I say, like, this is literally the craziest thing ever, when it's literally not. So we say a lot of big sweeping things that is not our intention. So if we ever offend you guys, most of the time, it probably wasn't our intention, so we apologize. But moving forward, we think all sports players are idiots. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah.
It's going to get us fired from our own podcast.
They can't fire me. I'm the leader of this editing. They can't take it away from me.
But in ends of that, we just wanted to say that we obviously don't think that all sports players are people who just like to party and are uncultured. And they do great things sometimes, and they play great sports and they provide entertainment, and they can be great people and they can be bad people just like everyone else.
Yeah, and they do far more in their lives than I will ever do.
Exactly.
So who's to judge? And then to get on to
what the world is talking about.
What the whole world is talking about. Coronavirus. Which we're not here to explain to you what it is or anything like that. But I just had a couple of things that I wanted to share with my fellow humans that I've been seeing online and I think are also good ideas.
Okay.
Because one, I keep seeing like everyone is really back and forth on the whole thing. Like we're overreacting, blah, 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 blah. Things like that. Which the panic in the grocery stores is an overreaction.
The toilet paper holding hoarding is an overreaction.
Yeah, just fucking literally get in the shower if you need to.
Right.
Like,
I'm like, I'm going to buy a bidet.
Honestly, this is when Americans get on bidets.
Right? And like, you can buy like an attachment for like 40 or 50 bucks.
Yeah, it's great.
Hell yeah.
So not anything like that. But what I will say about the hoarding thing is, like, remember that you have neighbors and that they also need items, and maybe just take what you and your family need and move on, because that's the safest thing. But some fun things I saw were, during this time, a lot of people are gonna be without money. Mm-hmm. That's like a really sad fact.
Yeah, like my mom just lost her job until this is over.
Yeah, and like, I know people like that too. At the service industry, it's really hard because people aren't going out as much. So I saw that continue to pay for services you would normally have done on a regular basis, like if you pay for childcare, mm-hmm. if you pay to have someone come clean your house, continue to pay those people. It's already coming out of your paycheck. If you can afford to do it, like if you're still just working from home, pay those people because they don't have the money, and like, take care of your fellow humans. Help local businesses by buying gift cards if you would already go there. Like, I'm going to go to my local coffee shop and get a gift card, but I'm not going to be going to get coffee for the next while because I'm going to be keeping myself away from them, you know? Mm-hmm. And also, if you're going to be working from home, I think this is a great one. Shelters rely heavily on volunteers and will not have enough volunteers to watch all of their animals. So if you're going to be working from home, take in some animals in your house and foster them in the meantime.
Are you going to foster a kitten?
I would love to.
Are you going to convince Taylor to foster a kitten?
I want to try and foster some animals while we work from home. And then just a way to help yourself is to log off of social media for real. Like, this weekend, I had to do it several times because the panic was overwhelming when you're on social media.
Yeah.
Because that's the only thing people are talking about. And there's the people who are saying, like, hide your kids, hide your wife. And then there are the people who are just posting memes about, like, LOL, we're going to die. So,
me.
Like, between all of that, it's just overwhelming because no one actually cares on either side of those opinions. So, just do yourself a favor and log off of social media sometimes when you feel yourself getting overwhelmed.
Yes. All right. And then I have just a little something to say about it as well. So, I basically didn't know what the coronavirus was. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you hear that it's spreading, people are getting sick, some people are dying, wash your hands,
right,
and wipe your ass, apparently.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I was trying to make another joke about toilet paper
hoarding. Yeah.
It went poorly.
No, it's okay. I honestly should have gotten the joke and I didn't. So it's not your fault.
And so this was my binge a couple weeks ago, but the podcast, This Podcast Will Kill You, mm-hmm. did an episode on coronaviruses. And it's not scary.
Mm-hmm.
It's not trying to panic you. It's really informative. And I learned so much. Like, they go back between, like, of the history of coronaviruses, the biology of it.
Yeah.
I learned that coronavirus is like the type of common cold that you get,
mm-hmm.
and there's just different strains, and usually like they're upper respiratory infections, but this, which is related to SARS and MERS that happened before, are lower respiratory infections, and mm-hmm. so it's like a pneumonia,
right?
But it was just they had like specialists on, doctors, disease, like oncologists, and like all these people who spoke, and mm-hmm. it was just really informative, and I would have known nothing besides like the widespread panic that the news is telling you for 5 minutes and that you see on Facebook.
Right. Yeah. And it's, I think that a lot of the panic is misplaced in that like we're all gonna die, when it's actually just like it spreads really easily. So
protect your frail people.
Yeah, protect your frail people. And just like, I think that the really scary thing about this is like, it shows how your fellow neighbor would react if the apocalypse actually happened.
Right.
because in this time we should be helping one another and we should be doing whatever we can to make sure that everyone doesn't end up in the fucking street from losing their job instead of like going and hoarding the toilet paper. I went and got groceries this weekend and this woman was buying 6 loaves of bread. And in my head, I was like, I know for a fact she doesn't like she's not buying those for other people. But I tried to have the benefit of the doubt and say, like, maybe she was buying those for friends who couldn't go to the grocery store. Yeah. But if you aren't, what the fuck are you going to do with 6 loaves of bread maybe, unless you have 9 kids?
I was going to say, maybe she has 12 children.
Yeah, maybe she does. It's very possible in this area. But, like, you can't get through 1 loaf of bread without it going bad for the week, I guarantee you. So don't buy 6 loaves if you don't need it.
I know. Like, I bought... Publix had buy one, get one free loaves last week.
Yeah.
So I got 2. And I was like, I'm going to make French toast. I'm going to make grilled cheeses every day. I got to use it up.
You got to eat that bread. Bread goes bad so quickly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I did want to say that the episode... of this podcast will kill you is episode 43.
Mm-hmm.
And it is called My Coronaviruses.
Nice. Yeah. Sometimes like listening to something like that can also like really ease your anxiety that you're feeling about it.
Yeah.
So check it out if you are feeling really anxious about it.
Yeah.
And also
want some more info.
Your feelings are valid. If you're feeling scared and stuff, you like have been led to be scared. It's okay. Don't feel bad. Basically,
and
that's
that
my
that,
tirade. Yeah. I've just been really like, it's just like one of those really sad and confusing things that's going on in the world. So this is where I go to talk out my feelings and you guys have to deal with it. All right, but I'm done. Let's get into the frickin' frackin' episode.
All right. So what are you binging?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we didn't even binge yet.
Guys. Fuck, I'm so sorry we're talking for so long. We really aren't. Compared to other podcasts, we're great. But I did not come up with a binge for you because I completely forgot about it. So I'm going to need you to go first like normal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to just ask me what I'm...
I mean, I can. I was going to leave all of this in, but I will ask you because now it's awkward that I said that I'm going to leave it all in. God damn it, Sarah. No,
I'm
just
sorry.
Kidding. What are you binging this week, my friend?
So this week I am binging a show on Netflix. I'd watched it before, but I only...
Doesn't count then.
No,
get a new binge.
No.
I'm just kidding.
I watched it like years ago, but I only got to season 4 and I think they're up to like season 7 on Netflix.
Okay.
And so I'm starting over.
Yeah.
It is New Girl.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's just, it's something that since I've watched it before, mm-hmm. I can kind of have in the background while I'm at work.
Right.
And it's funny and it's cute and I love Zooey Deschanel.
Yeah.
And I want to be her in my next life. So
fair.
Yeah. So that's what I'm binging.
Maybe you can come back as her AI robot.
Oh, would love it. Except she's dating one of the Property Brothers and I don't like that.
It's a weird choice.
It is.
Yeah.
But I think it's only because since we worked at Michael's in the custom frame shop and we had to have cardboard cutouts of the Property Brothers, like, staring at us 24/7 for weeks, that
yeah.
were weirded out by them.
It wasn't great. And then I did take those cardboard cutouts home. And then I would hide the cutout around the apartment for our roommate at the time to find. Like, I hid it in his shower and I hid it in his closet. So it was great. It came in handy, but we are both traumatized by the Property Brothers.
Yes. So what are you binging, Morgan?
So remember I was going to read a book every month for this year?
Yeah.
Well, February I didn't because I was studying for that test that I didn't pass. And I started a book, didn't finish it. But I did read 2 books in January, so I'm counting it. There's still been 3 books read for the year.
Oh, yeah. That's great. I was going to say you also read your test prep booklet.
Definitely. So I have picked up this book and started it so many times. And I haven't finished it, not because it's a bad book, but because I just, like, every time I start to read it, my life gets crazy, and then I put it down. So, I read, finally, The Book Thief.
Okay.
By, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, obviously very on brand for me, Marcus Zusick, I think.
Okay.
And it is a novel that is like about the Holocaust, essentially. It's about a little girl named Liesl who is growing up in like Nazi war times, and she finds books as a solace during this time.
Aww.
But she also, like, because it's outlawed to read them, she is like stealing them to read. So
okay.
It's just like a really nice but sad story, you know? And I always find like any type of information about the Nazis interesting, even if it's like a fictional novelization, like that's just always been stuff I've been drawn to. So it was nice to finally actually finish the book, and it was good. I really liked it, and I'm glad that I finally got past the first like 150 pages.
Good. Yeah, I'm glad. I, you know, we'll try and read one book this year.
You mean, if it's not your bag, it's not your bag. You don't have to read books.
I know, but also, like, you bought me a book and I haven't started it
Fair
yet.
Fair point. That's okay, though. You'll get there eventually.
You know what? And when I do, it'll be my fucking binge. I low-key wish that, like, we got a couple days off instead of working from home
right.
for the coronavirus, just so I could, like, get some spring cleaning done and read a book and, like...
I feel that on a spiritual level.
Yeah. But we are grateful that we are getting paid.
Yeah. And I'm grateful to have the capability to work from home.
Yes.
But yeah, like, I have big plans that on my 15-minute breaks and, like, on my 30, I'm going to do stuff around the house. It's absolutely not going to happen. But I have big plans for now.
I wish I could do that.
Yeah.
Because would be great, and I could let out my dog and stuff. But unfortunately, I don't have internet at my house because I'm broke. So I go to my parents' house to work from home.
It's fair. It's fine. I mean, you're still doing it.
Exactly.
Okay, let's get into this week's case finally, because we're 20 minutes in. This week we are going to cover the case of Dorothy Stratton, who was a small town girl turned Playboy model and actress by her controlling soon-to-be husband. After she gained success and found love at the hands of a filmmaker, her jealous husband murdered her after unsuccessfully trying to win her back, and then he turned the gun on himself.
I feel like, not to toot my own horn.
Yeah.
But I feel like I did a great job.
You did.
Like, that should, like, it's not very factual at all, but it's like, it sounds like a movie poster, like a movie credit.
It does.
Like, it's very dramatic.
It is. And to kick us off with a fun fact, the Red Hot Chili Peppers song, Californication, was apparently inspired by Dorothy's plight.
Yep.
Which is very cool, very fun.
So, let's get into it. Dorothy Stratton was actually born Dorothy Ruth Hoag Stratton on February 28th, 1960. Hoag Stratton. It's Hoag Stratton.
Hoag Stratton.
Yeah, I can't do an accent.
I can't either. That was poor.
But she was born in 1960 in Grace Maternity Hospital in Vancouver, Canada. Her parents were Nellie and Simon Hoag Stratton, who immigrated from the Netherlands, and she was the oldest of three children. Her brother, John Arthur, was born in 1961, and I couldn't find if it was her stepsister or her half-sister, but she had a younger sister named Louise Stratton, who was born in 1968, so she was 8 years younger. When Dorothy was three, her father left the family and her mother remarried, but this marriage also failed. Her mother struggled to make enough money for the family, working full-time as a nurse, so the family depended on welfare grants, and Dorothy began working as soon as she could to help her mother out. Dorothy went to high school at Centennial High School, in Coquilliam, I think so, British Columbia. And while in high school, she worked part-time at a local Dairy Queen. In 1977, while at work, Dorothy met 26-year-old Paul Snyder, And the two eventually started dating. And keep in mind, she's like 17 and he's 26.
Yeah. Never date a guy who's not in high school.
When you're in high school.
Yeah. Like, that's just, that means they can't find someone their own age, which means there's probably something not great about them.
Right? And Dorothy had been working at Dairy Queen for 4 years at this point. Like, since she started high school, she started working there.
Yeah. Like, pretty much as soon as she could get a job to help her mom out, she was probably doing so. So, just a little bit of background about Paul Snyder, because he's a big part of this story. Paul Leslie Snyder was born on April 15th, 1951, in Vancouver to Jewish parents. His parents split up when he was young, and he ended up dropping out of school in the seventh grade. By the mid-1970s, Paul worked at a nightclub as an auto show promoter and pimp, and he had dreams of becoming famous in Hollywood after he went on a visit to Hollywood. One time, he lost a ton of money to some loan sharks who actually hung him by his ankles from the 30th floor of a hotel, and he split town right after that. He lived a lavish life and liked attention, and he drove a black Corvette, wore mink coats, and a jewel-encrusted Star of David around his neck. So all in all, he sounds like a big tool.
Yeah.
He was called the Jewish Pimp, which is a name he came up with himself, and was like, people call me the Jewish Pimp, but no one called him that except himself.
Right.
Which is, if you have to make up your own nickname, again, like not a good nickname. So a bit after Dorothy and Paul began like hanging out and dating, Paul hired a professional photographer to take nude photos of Dorothy, and he sent them to the Playboy magazine in the summer of 1978. Since Dorothy was under the age of 19, which is the legal age of majority, known in the U.S. as the age of consent, in British Columbia, and she actually had to convince her mother to sign the model release form. Dorothy said in an interview, "It took him a little while to talk me into agreeing to taking some test pictures. I had never taken my clothes off for anyone I didn't know. It took me about 2 weeks to agree." People who knew them said that Paul saw an opportunity with Dorothy and began grooming her. They saw him as a predator, and Paul would compliment her on the things she was most insecure about to, like, make her feel better. And he would also buy her expensive gifts and dinners. And he even bought her an expensive gown to wear to her senior prom, which he went with her to. At our high school, if your date was over the age of, like, what, 23, they weren't allowed to accompany you to the prom.
Which makes sense.
Yes, because an adult man shouldn't be going to prom with you. So Paul had also unsuccessfully tried to promote other women to become playmates, and one of the most well-known one was a stripper that he met back in 1974.
So in August of 1978, Dorothy and Paul flew to Los Angeles because Playboy liked her photos and agreed to fly them out to take some test shots, and it was actually her first time ever being in an airplane or a limo. Mario Casilli, who was the photographer who took her test shots, said, "I called her a woman child. When you looked at her, she was a total lady, had this statuesque look. But when you talked to her, she was still a little girl." And this year, she was actually chosen as a finalist for the 25th anniversary Great Playmate Hunt, which was a contest to choose the centerfold for Playboy's 20th anniversary or 25th anniversary edition. She ended up losing this competition to Candy Loving,
which is definitely a real name.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Former Playmate Jenna Cano said at the time, "Playboy thought that Candy Loving could better handle the spotlight that came with being named the magazine's 25th anniversary Playmate." She also said Dorothy was just shy and she needed a lot of grooming, so they knew she wasn't ready yet, even though she was as beautiful as Candy Loving and could have easily been that special playmate. She just wasn't ready.
She just seemed like very naive.
Yes.
Yeah.
but Hugh Hefner was so pleased with Dorothy's performance and her photos that he named her Miss August 1979, and she began working as a Playboy bunny at the Playboy Club. She worked as a greeter at the door because she was too young to serve alcohol. And Hugh Hefner saw Dorothy's natural body as basically perfect, whereas the other playmates, a lot of them had to have plastic surgery. The only thing that they changed about her was trimming her hair a little shorter, and then they also changed her last name from Hoogstraten to Stratton.
Yeah. And also, I think that's annoying because, one, those women only had plastic surgery because of the standards created by Playboy. And the surgery they were probably having done was like a labiaplasty to make their vaginas look better for, you know,
and like boob jobs. And
stuff. Yeah, like it was all things like that, which they probably were only insecure about after looking at Playboy. And yeah,
or did
of the sorts.
In order to get into Playboy.
Yeah.
So it is said that she was uncomfortable with the casual nudity and sex. And fellow playmates, including Pamela Bryant, Gail Stanton, and Marcy Hansen, befriended Dorothy, and they protected her from some of Hefner's friends who they considered to be predators. And whatever success that Dorothy had, she basically thought that it was all due to Paul. And as soon as he heard that she'd become Miss August in 1979, he flew to Los Angeles and proposed.
Yeah.
He was like, ooh, I got these big bucks in this girl.
Yeah. On June 1st of 1979, Dorothy and Paul got married in Las Vegas. So it was a very short wedding or engagement period. A lot of people disapproved of the marriage, including Hugh Hefner, as Paul was still obsessed with getting the attention of other women, and her friends thought that it would actually hold back her career to get married. Hefner told one reporter that he said, I said to her that he had a pimp-like quality about him, which he was an actual pimp, so sure, yes, you did get that vibe. Once Paul was caught with another woman by Allison Reynolds, who was the Playboy social secretary and was Dorothy's makeup artist. Security kicked Paul out of the Playboy mansion and told him that he was only allowed to return accompanied by Dorothy. Because of this, Paul began an addiction to cocaine and became increasingly violent and controlling. Being Dorothy's manager, Paul controlled pretty much every aspect of her life. He wouldn't let her smoke and would monitor her drinking if she was even allowed to do so. He did let her smoke a little marijuana and cocaine under his supervision, but she wasn't super into drugs. Also, like, cocaine is really better than drinking, like having a drink.
Right.
I do not see the correlation.
You know, it was the 70s. They used
That's
cocaine
true.
To stay awake and stay skinny.
Yeah. He warned her of the men who would try to use her and taught her how to let them down easy. Most importantly, he discussed with her who she might actually have to sleep with, Hefner being at the top of that list. And Dorothy actually wanted to make a change from working at Playboy to an acting career. In late 1979, Dorothy appeared on Playboy's Roller Disco and Pajama Party, which was on ABC. And after this appearance, she began booking small parts in movies and TV shows like Fantasy Island and Buck Rogers in the 25th Century. And she also appeared on the Johnny Carson show. In 1980, she was named the Playmate of the Year, which is like a really big deal. And in 1980, she also landed a lead role in the movie Galaxina. And after this, Paul realized that Dorothy was going to make it big. And this is when he started to feel like he was losing grip of her because he was becoming bigger than he expected. She was becoming bigger.
So shortly after the movie Galaxina, Dorothy was introduced to filmmaker, and excuse me for butchering his name, Peter Bogdanovich, and the two began having
Bogdanovich?
Bogdanovich, yeah. And the two began having an affair together. Peter had recently separated from his partner and was looking for new projects. He began spending time at the Playboy Mansion, and he fell in love with Dorothy. He ended up writing a role specifically for Dorothy in his upcoming movie, They All Laughed, which starred Audrey Hepburn, Ben Gazzara, and John Ritter. This movie was a love story set in New York about how falling in love was a mistake, and it was considered to be very autobiographical for Peter's life. The movie was also Dorothy's fifth film in a career that only had begun the prior year.
Which is pretty impressive.
Yeah. While filming in New York, the pair kept their affair extremely secret, like no one knew about it. But apparently Peter wasn't the best person. And his actors, besides Dorothy, found him to be mean-spirited. He worked Dorothy 12 hours a day, and she was weak from not eating in order to keep her weight down.
Yeah.
One time she was chewing gum, and Peter came up to her and said, "You shouldn't be chewing gum. It has sugar in it." And then she disposed of it into his hand.
Yeah. What you find out, like, after her death is that Peter was also a dick.
Yeah, not the greatest guy.
He, like, did some nice things, but all in all, still an asshole. During this time, Paul, being the crazy motherfucker that he is, hired a private detective to follow Dorothy around, and this is what is said to cause them to separate. Because he found that she was seeing another man, and they were still technically married at this point. Dorothy moved in with Peter at his home in Bel Air and planned to officially file for a divorce from Paul. When Paul found out they were living together, it didn't really sit well with him. And according to a former LA homicide detective, Richard DeAnda, he ended up borrowing a .38 revolver from a friend and waited outside Peter's home. He supposedly waited outside of the home for hours, intending to shoot anyone who appeared at the entrance, regardless of who it was. But after hours of inactivity, he grew impatient and left. And he admitted to a friend that he actually had thoughts of suicide. And soon after this admission, his friend asked for their gun back. And it was probably because they realized this guy was kind of unstable.
Yeah.
And shouldn't be in possession of a gun. So Paul tried to come through on a project for Dorothy in an attempt to win her back, but she turned down the deal. Marielle Hemingway, who played Dorothy in the film about her life, Star 80, said, "As she started to slip away, he started to realize he owned nothing. He wasn't doing anything. Nobody was admiring him. Hugh Hefner is not going to call him back. And then this deep, deep, deep freaky thing that was going on inside of him took control and he lost it." During this time, Paul found another woman named Patty Lorman, who was a teenage grocery store clerk that he wanted to turn into his next Playboy model. So this was how he got women and, like, tried to become famous, was through them by turning them into Playboy models, which is such a specific way to become famous.
Right.
Because he did it on, like, more than three occasions.
Yeah, that was his thing.
Yeah. Super strange. So Patty moved into the Los Angeles home that Dorothy and Paul had previously shared with their housemate, Stephen Kushner. And Paul tried to groom her into basically becoming the next Dorothy. He taught her how to walk like Dorothy, wear her hair like Dorothy, and even dress like her. Patty said that Paul would talk about Dorothy all the time. She's quoted as saying, "Paul was distraught. He was sad. He was like, gosh, she didn't even tell me she loved me or kissed me. There were times when he would talk to me and he would start crying. He would sit on the couch and play his guitar, and he had wrote songs to Dorothy."
So when Dorothy and Peter moved back from filming, she went to Paul and expressed a desire for an amicable separation. And this occurred on August 8th. And it had actually been 3 months since they had even seen each other. She even offered him a settlement because he had helped her get into Hollywood.
And she was a nice person,
right? When they met up, Paul was certain that he was going to be able to win Dorothy back, but she really stayed firm on wanting to separate. On August 9th, just a day after meeting with his ex, Paul went out with his private detective to a local gun store. He was told by the store that they could not sell him a firearm because of his Canadian citizenship. Paul asked the detective if he could buy it for him, and the detective was smart enough to say no.
Thankfully.
Right? He met with the PI again a day later and tried to convince him to buy him a machine gun for home protection. A machine gun.
That's what everybody needs for home protection.
But the man talked him out of it. On August 11th, he drove from San Fernando Valley to look at a gun he'd found for sale in the classified ads. But he got lost and gave up, having to go home and get the address. So later, he picked up the 12-gauge pump-action shotgun on the evening of August 13th, 1980. The man who he picked it up from even had to show him how to load and fire the gun.
Yeah.
This day actually marked Dorothy's second anniversary of her arriving in Los Angeles. Later, during the evening of August 13th, Paul made some weird comments to his friends during a conversation about him buying the gun, and he was saying that he was going to take up hunting. He also, in the same conversation, casually brought up the subject of all of the playmates that had unexpectedly died. Specifically, he discussed Claudia Jennings, an actress and former playmate of the year who had been killed in a car accident the year before. He continued to make morbid comments about this, saying that the editors of Playboy would still use the nude photos of the next dead playmate.
Yeah, like, he was just weirdly obsessed with Playboy as well as being obsessed with Dorothy. Like, he seemed just really invested in Playboy as a business. It was very strange. On August 14th, 1980... Dorothy spent the morning with her business manager to discuss the amount of property she was going to offer her estranged husband. Toward the end of her meeting, her business manager told her that she should have a lawyer handle all of these meetings in order to protect her. But she explained that she wanted to deal with it personally to try and remain friends with the man because, again, she was naive but also a very kind person. So she wanted to keep things amicable.
It was her husband.
Yeah. Around noon, she then went over to the home she once shared with Paul to try to negotiate a settlement as part of their divorce. Kushner and Lorman also still lived in this home. Her close friends actually expressed their concern to her about going over to his house alone, but she did it regardless. A quote that says it all: Hef and Peter kind of forbid her from going to see him. They forbid it. She had to sneak. She had to lie. She just misjudged that guy so badly. She just had that little flaw that was her flaw, not being able to see the evil in people. And, yeah, I think it's weird that they're like, they forbid her because, but she just didn't see that he was
a piece of shit.
Well, like, no one really knew about emotional abuse back then. And from what we can tell, he wasn't, like, physically abusive, but he was definitely, like, emotionally and mentally abusive. So she probably just had no idea that she was being, like, manipulated to that degree.
Definitely.
Which is what I mean when I was saying she's naive. I don't mean, like, because I know someone's going to say something about that. I'm not actually saying she's naive. And the other woman, Patty, who lived there, was also actually at the residence that morning, but left right before Dorothy got there because she didn't want it to be uncomfortable that she was there while they were talking.
Yeah. And wanted to give them space.
Yeah, which is reasonable. And the other friend, Kushner, hadn't been home during that day because he had spent the previous night at his girlfriend's house, and then he went to work, so he was just gone all day. Paul's PI called shortly after Dorothy arrived, and Paul told him that everything was going fine. Both friends arrived home around 8 p.m., and when Kushner arrived home that night, he saw Dorothy's car in the driveway, and so was Paul's car. And just a fun fact, Paul's license plate was a vanity plate that said Star 80. And this would actually later become the title of a biopic on Dorothy's life. Kushner and Lorman said that when they got home, they watched TV upstairs, assuming that Dorothy and Paul were still downstairs together and wanted privacy.
But after a few hours of silence, at around 11 p.m., Paul's PI actually called the roommates because Paul wasn't answering his phone, so they decided to go down and knock on Paul's bedroom door. But there was no answer. After no response, Kushner just opened the door. Inside the room, he found Paul and Dorothy's naked bodies dead on the floor. Lorman said, "It looked like a horror movie, a staged horror movie, mannequins and fake blood." The police came and investigated the scene. It was determined by the police that Paul had raped Dorothy and then shot her in the face with a shotgun before turning it on himself and shooting himself in the head, all within an hour of her being in his home. And also in some articles, it said that he also raped her after she was dead, but, like, I don't know how they would be able to confirm this.
Yeah, it sounds more, like, sensationalizing. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure there is a way to tell based on, like, the tissues and stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you'd be able to tell if there was penetration before and after.
Yeah.
I'm not a scientist, so I don't know.
At the time of her death, Dorothy was only 20 years old.
So fucking young.
I know. It's believed that the final act of rape was Paul's final act of control over her since he had lost his power. Patty Lorman also said that, like, the picture of it is a picture that never goes away and it's stuck in her head forever. There was blood splatter on the walls, curtains, and television, and the police were surprised, given the power of the shotgun blast, that the room wasn't soaked in blood.
Gross.
It was determined that Paul killed himself about an hour after killing Dorothy.
Okay.
So, like, I kind of wonder if he was, like, panicking or what.
Yeah.
So now a little bit to the graphic part. Dorothy's body was laid crouched kind of along the bottom corner of the bed. Her knees were resting on the carpet floor and her shoulder was drooping down. The shotgun shell entered her face right above her left eye and shattered her skull. Dorothy had also been sodomized and her body had actually been moved after death as she had a bloody handprint on her buttocks and her left leg. Paul's body was found lying face down, parallel to the foot of the bed. The shotgun had burnt his right cheek, and the force of the blast caused him to fall face forward. He had strands of Dorothy's hair clutched in his hand, and he had always told friends that he would rather die than go to jail.
So I guess he took that very seriously.
Right.
So the police later found over $1,000 in cash in Dorothy's purse, which was still in the living room. And she had taken this out to give to Paul as a down payment from, like, the settlement they were going to settle upon.
Mm-hmm.
There was also a letter in her purse from Paul where he explained his financial distress, saying that he couldn't make money because he didn't have a green card and that she needed to take care of him. Sometime in the early morning of August 15th, the private detective called the Playboy Mansion and informed Hefner that Dorothy had been murdered. Hefner then called Peter, who had to be sedated after collapsing after hearing news of his love's death. And Dorothy's mother was informed later that morning at her Vancouver home by an RCMP Mountie. And this horrific scene of a murder-suicide shook Hollywood and shook Peter and Hefner even more. Both men were devastated over losing Dorothy. And a quote from a man named Rundle says, "Hef was never the same. Part of him died. Part of all of us died because Dorothy was special to us." And Hugh Hefner actually made a statement about this death, saying he decided to talk publicly about it because there is still a great tendency for this thing to fall into the classic cliche of small town girl comes to Playboy, comes to Hollywood, life in the fast lane, and that was somehow related to her death. And that is not what really happened. A very sick guy saw his meal ticket and his connection to power, whatever, slipping away. And it was that that made him kill her. Dorothy was cremated and her remains are buried in the same Los Angeles cemetery as Marilyn Monroe and later Hefner when he passed away. And the inscription chosen for her tombstone was a quote from Ernest Hemingway's novel, A Farewell to Arms, and it reads as such. If people bring so much courage to this world, the world has to kill them to break them. So of course it kills them. It kills the very good and the very gentle and the very brave impartially. If you are none of these, you can be sure that it will kill you too, but there will be no special hurry. We love you, DR. And fun fact, earlier we mentioned Mariel Hemingway, who played Dorothy in the movie Star 80. She is actually also the granddaughter of Ernest Hemingway, so there's a little connection.
Yeah. So going into the aftermath of her death, in August 1981, 1 year after her death, Dorothy's final film was released, They All Laughed. It had a disappointing limited run in a handful of theaters in the Southwest, Upper Midwest, and the Northeast, and then it was quietly withdrawn from theaters. Peter was so upset by this that he was determined to have this movie be seen by a larger market. He paid for a re-release of the movie out of pocket beginning in late 1981 and rolling into the following year. He ultimately sank more than $5 million into this endeavor. Due to this, he declared bankruptcy in 1985 and lost his home that he shared with Dorothy. They All Laughed has largely been recognized by critics and filmmakers as Peter's best film. 4 years after Dorothy's death, in August 1984, Peter published a book called The Killing of the Unicorn. This book blamed Hefner and the culture of Playboy for contributing to Stratton's death. He also accused Hefner of making unwanted advances towards her in the Playboy Mansion in 1978. And one of the quotes in his book said, "If I had to confront my own responsibility, there could be no way to ignore his. She could not handle the slick professional machinery of the Playboy sex factory, nor the continual efforts of its founder to bring her into his personal fold, no matter what she wanted." Hefner was asked about this in a 1985 interview with ABC News by Geraldo Rivera. Quote, "For the record, did you seduce her?" To which Hefner replied, "No, I didn't. And for the record, I never tried to." Hefner was also quoted as saying, "Dorothy's tragic death was motivated not in any way by her association with Playboy, but clearly by the breakup of her marriage because of the affair with Peter Bogdanovich." Hefner also blamed Peter for the stroke that he had in 1985, which I just thought was interesting.
Yeah.
Like blaming him for a stroke. Nearly every review of his book was negative. Many weren't even mad about the Hefner attacks, but they were mostly mad at his sudden feminist take on life that hadn't been there before. He was also sued by private detective Mark Goldstein for some adverse remarks published in this book.
And from what I could tell, there was an incident where Dorothy and Hefner like went into a hot tub together and they were both naked. And this is all told from Hefner, so who knows if this is true. And then Peter like came back at it and said that it didn't happen that way. but supposedly they were in a hot tub together and they were naked. And Hefner like asked for a kiss and she gave him a kiss. And in the book, Peter says like it was a full-blown sexual assault. And Hefner says that like they willingly were in this hot tub together. So I'm sure it isn't 100% either of those, you know?
Yeah, like, and, like, they even later on go back and forth, like, him and Hefner.
Yeah, they just constantly go back and forth on the issue. So It's really interesting. But yeah, Peter suddenly was just like trying to come at it from a feminist take. And people are like, nothing you've ever done before is feminist. So why are you suddenly making this a feminist issue? Peter also went on to take care of Dorothy's family for years after she died, including her younger sister, Louise Stratton. The reason he did this, by his own account, was because he felt that the two would have eventually gotten married and that they would in turn be his family. So just because Dorothy was dead doesn't mean that they weren't still his family, which is a nice sentiment.
Yeah, definitely.
But this next thing, as soon as I read that they became friends, I knew this next thing was going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Eventually, Peter and Louise's relationship developed in Louise, not Louis. Peter and Louise's relationship developed into a romance, and the couple was married 8 years after her murder, when Louise was 20 years old and Peter was 49.
So there's a definite age gap there.
So when they became really close, does that mean Louise was 12? Because they got married 8 years after?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool, 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 cool. So Peter is also a super great guy.
Yeah.
Hugh Hefner made claims that Peter had seduced Louise when Dorothy died and Louise was only 13, saying that Peter had used her as a pathological replacement for the woman he could no longer have. Peter and Louise denied this, and Louise sued Hefner for slander, but the case was dropped. But supposedly, Louise had some plastic surgery that made her look more like Dorothy. So it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
The couple eventually got divorced in 2001 after 13 years of marriage, but they continue to work together on film projects, and the most recent one that I was able to find is on the 2014 film She's Funny That Way. Louise, after having seen Paul's behavior towards Dorothy, grew up into an anti-domestic violence activist and built a shelter for domestic violence victims in Los Angeles. And just as like a final thought, a lot of people were struck by the tragedy of Dorothy's death, and those in the industry actually think that she could have been up there with like Julia Roberts and Reese Witherspoon if she was able to continue acting, because that's how good her acting chops were, I guess. And from critic Vincent Canby, he said that Stratton possessed a great screen presence and would have become a first grade comedian had more time and work been allotted to her. She also had a flair for writing good poetry and essays, and she also appeared in the Vancouver Canadiens baseball program 1 month before her death. But yeah, just a super interesting case. Like all of them, they're all interesting, but this one is one that I haven't really heard covered on other podcasts.
Yeah.
Which we always say. But do you have anything else you want to say? Oh, yeah. We have to do a Florida man. I'm all out of sorts.
I have a Florida man that I want to say.
Okay. Say it then.
So this happened March 6th of this year.
Okay.
So just a couple weeks ago. Florida 7th grader sends 41 to the hospital when he mistakes pepper spray for body spray.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. So a Florida boy sent 41 of his classmates to the hospital when he mistook a can of pepper spray for body fragrance spray and sprayed himself with it at the school. A student at Highlands Middle School in Jacksonville, Florida, caused the school's gymnasium to be evacuated after dispersing the spray, and he had taken it from the belongings of another student, like thinking it was body spray, and just sprayed it everywhere.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. There's a couple accounts of students saying, like, people were crying and throwing up and...
Well, yeah. That stuff hurts really bad.
Yeah. They were all... The people that were taken to the hospital were all fine and released later that day.
That's good.
The police noted, or the principal noted, that while pepper spray is not illegal, it's prohibited by rules of the school district. And they plan to discipline the student who brought the spray to class, not the student who sprayed it. Because I mean, he didn't know.
Yeah, he didn't know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at least it wasn't a gun and he thought it was a toy gun or something.
Yeah,
you know?
It could have been much worse. But that's still...
It's still funny.
It is. It is lightly funny.
Like, because I could see myself doing that, being like, oh, grabbing yeah. something and be like, oh, is this a new perfume? And just spraying it all over myself.
I'm constantly terrified, even though there's like a cap on it, mm-hmm. that I'm going to accidentally spray my pepper spray like directly into my face, reaching into my purse. So I could see how one would do it, basically. Yeah. But... my brother, because he's a police officer, they have to get tased and pepper sprayed.
Yep.
And he said that he would rather get tased again.
Really?
He said pepper spray hurts so bad that he would rather get tased again, because at least with tasing, it's over with. But with pepper spray, it like lingers and it like your face gets like itchy and sometimes swollen and it's just like in your eyes. So...
oh, no.
I can't imagine how middle schoolers would handle it.
I know, right? Like, I've seen those videos, like, of friends that we know that have been in the army or police officers getting pepper sprayed. And I'm just like, you poor soul.
My cousin is currently going through to do that. And mm-hmm. she sent a photo of herself afterwards to the chat. And we were all just like, God damn, that looks horrible. Like,
oh, no. That's terrible.
Yeah. So... I guess if you're gonna become a police officer, supposedly that's the worst part.
Yeah.
Like, at least you get that out of the way and then you get tased and it's not as bad.
You're like, wow, I could do that again.
Yeah. But we hope that you guys enjoyed this week's story, and
we apologize for all of the talk in the beginning.
Yeah, but you know what? Sometimes you gotta do it, and it just happened that all of it fell on the same week. So
exactly. And I listened to our first episode again, because I was just like, I wonder how much better we've gotten.
None. I'm just kidding.
No. We bullshitted for like 40 minutes.
Did we really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And realistically, it was more like 25.
Yeah.
But it was just random stuff.
Okay.
That no one cared about.
Oh, yeah. Because literally no one knows who we are. So yeah. They're like, it was just, yeah.
We were like, this is who I am. I'm going to just talk about what I want because.
Oh, yeah.
They need to learn who I am.
That totally sounds accurate, and I don't want to go back and listen to it because it will make me cringe, also the editing. But we just don't have to talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, if you've made it this far, congratulations.
Yeah, honestly, you're a real one, because it was really bad in the beginning, and we totally understand that. Do you ever wonder, like, who would listen to our podcast now after listening to the first episode, like... if they listened to it way back then and like stumbled across us again, you know what I mean?
Okay. I haven't thought about that. I do.
I think about all of the people who listened to the first episode and were like, this is fucking terrible, and turned it off. And like, if they ever listened, maybe they would like it again. Probably not, but I don't know.
Maybe.
I am dying.
Okay. So
not really. I'm just...
she has the coronavirus.
I do not have the coronavirus. I do have a pretty gross cough, though. So, you know, just living my best life.
Yeah.
And I didn't mention it at the top of the episode again, so you're just going to listen to me coughing in the background the entire episode.
No, you've gotten really good at editing it out.
Yeah, but I did it a lot while you were talking today.
Oh, well.
But make sure you guys check us out on social media. Check us out on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. If your favorite form of social media is Gmail like ours, check us out on Gmail.
Do it. We'll respond.
Yeah. And I think that's it, right? Yeah.
Stay clean, stay safe, stay healthy.
Yeah. And keep on binging. Bye.
See ya.